Hi, welcome to Dealing the Butter Lane Antiques podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Monty.
And together we run Butter Lane Antiques. We are your hosts of today's episode.
This podcast is about the world of antique jewellery and specifically online dealing. It's what we like to think of as the other side of antiques. In this episode, we're going to tell you about Alex's health problems. You may have picked up on the fact that there have been a few over the years. We mentioned Alex not being able to use his arm and having a little bit of memory loss. Well, this is where we're going to explain it all. It might get a little bit dark along the way, but it's an important part of our story, and I think it really has sort of made who we are today. The story of Alex's health is a long and relatively in-depth one, so we can't skip over anything, otherwise it simply doesn't do it any justice. So we've split this episode into two parts. In this part, you'll hear about Alex's heart problems, the twists and turns of getting on and off the road to recovery, from tests to transplants with some armed robbery along the way. We'll be going through it all. Okay, so let's set the scene here. Let's go right back to the start. Over to you, Alex.
Okay, I won't, you know, witter on for too long, but for the purposes of today, I was born with a very complex heart condition. Called, also won't go too much into the science, transposition of the great arteries, which to put simply meant that my heart worked essentially back to front. So if you think, so your heart's got like, for instance, your ventricles,
left
chambers,
right.
Left and right ventricles. Your left ventricle is supposed to, your left ventricle will do one job, and the right ventricle does another job.
Yep.
I can't remember which is which. I probably should know this. But one pumps the blood all the way around the body.
The left.
All the way around the body. Yeah, exactly. Sorry, Monty knows more than me already. I've only lived with this 30 years.
My parents are both doctors. That's learned true. A thing or two along
the
way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so my left ventricle did the job of my right ventricle and vice versa. So essentially it worked back to front.
So it was connected to the opposite artery, right? Left was connected to the right was connected to the left.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Hmm. And this couldn't be corrected. It's called congenitally corrected. So as I got bigger and stronger, because the heart's a muscle, mm-hmm. the weaker side, which was taking on more of the work,
sort of adapted to
it. Yeah, it got bigger because it's a muscle, you know. Yeah. So it built, and the weaker side or the stronger side, which wasn't doing as much as it should have been, decreased. Or
it's amazing, whatever. Isn't it?
Yeah, I think there were other things going on as well. I think there was holes and leaks. And
well, you had surgery from, you know, a very, very young baby.
Yeah, 0, 3, and 8.
Wow. Open heart surgery.
Open heart surgery as a baby, you know. Yeah. So
crazy.
Sorry, parents, for everything I put you through. But after those years, from 8 up until the present day, essentially, mm-hmm. I did have a relatively normal life. Wasn't wrapped in cotton wool by my parents.
Yeah.
Was monitored sort of biannually. Was it twice a year?
Yeah, every 6 months you had a checkup.
So, yeah, right? Checkups and that sort of routine, you know, in the paediatric hospital. Always told one day I will need a valve replacement because the valve was failing.
Okay. So at some point in your life, you'd need another operation to...
You know, the doctors, I mean, they sort of say, let's see if we can get him to this point. And then as soon as you used to get to that point, they'd sort of go, well, he's here now, so we're not going to go and do it before there's a problem.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a bit of a grey area, isn't it?
I mean, from the beginning, I mean, you were one of the first, you know, you're of the first generation to survive what you were born with.
I think it was a pretty rare condition. I mean,
the doctors didn't really know.
Yeah, they didn't know what they were doing and
what to expect later on
and how it was going to turn out.
Yeah.
Until I guess I was about 20, five, so well into Butter Lane.
Yep.
I was born with this condition, had a very normal life until I was about 25. And I mean, I actually remember what happened, which I will go into. I'd been working, to excuse the phrase, my arse off.
Yeah, absolutely. Early days, Butter Lane.
Sort of started to feel, oh God, you know, not quite right. I'd been in New York after the initial trip.
Second trip to New York.
Bit of pleasure, bit of business, and mostly pleasure, but.
Which must have been early 2015, I think. Or
yeah, it was, yeah.
First half of 2015.
Well, you were in the office.
Yeah.
And I got back and I was like, oh my God, I don't feel good here. So I thought, right, I need a week in the sun away from the office. And
switch off from business, well, stresses.
I didn't know what was going on, didn't recognise the feeling. I mean, now if I got that feeling again, I would know, you know, what on earth this was. But because it hadn't happened before, I didn't.
Yeah.
So, went away to Dubai, to where my best friend lives, and it sort of just very, very quickly deteriorated from there. So I was very short of breath, very lethargic, and very unwell, really, whilst I was over there. I remember this vividly. I got back, called my mum, which was the usual situation of whoever was picking you up from the airport, you know, call them and tell them you've landed.
Yeah.
So I called her and said, I don't feel good here at all. I'm going to need some help. I can barely pick up my bag. I was very weak.
Struggling to get off the plane.
Struggling to walk, you know. And my mum was like, I remember looking at me being like, she knew I'd been with my mate, so she obviously thought I'd been partying. When I said I was going for a break, she goes, Jesus, Alex, what the hell have you been doing? Like, look at the colour of you now. I was like, I had that sort of grey, just totally drained up. And she said, we need to go to the hospital. And I, obviously being a bloke, I was like, oh no, absolutely no way.
I'll just go and sleep it off.
Yeah, be fine. Just take me back to yours. I'll go and have a couple, I've just had an overnight flight, I'm just a bit tired.
Yeah.
Typical me, you know, and then go for this sleep, woke up like, oh God, I'm definitely not right. Yeah, that didn't work. My dad came up and said, look, you've got two options here. You come to hospital with us, we take you, or I'm going to call an ambulance because, you know, you need to consider that something is seriously not right. So I ended up in A&E and et cetera. You know, they were doing all these tests. And the problem is with me, when I end up in hospital for tests, people are like, oh my God, because of the complexity of the condition. So I ended up on the cardiac assessment ward, everyone trying to work out what on earth was going on here, at the Manchester Royal Infirmary.
I mean, what did they think? What were their initial... You'd come in, well, like, I think clearly it's ill,
sort of, there's
Ill.
Something up with, you know, your heart's not working properly.
Right.
But it's probably nothing. So you need to stay in for a few further tests.
Yeah.
Which is always the instruction, you know.
Yeah. You're a special case.
Yeah. So, I was ill to the point where, like, it was not good. I won't go into it. It was pretty gross, but it was not good. And I remember the doctor on call, the cardiac... it was a weekend. It had gone into a weekend at this point.
Okay.
So you guys must have had no idea what was going on.
Well, the first I heard of it, we'd both gone on holiday at the same time and closed the office for a week, which is very unusual. We don't usually operate in that way. And the first I heard, you called me from hospital. I was in Greece and said, something pretty bad's happened. I'm in hospital. I'm pretty ill. And... didn't elaborate much more at that point.
Yeah, so it was in Manchester where I'd first, they'd first sort of mentioned this idea of, you know, Alex, sorry, we know we've told you always need a valve replacement, but, you know, it's sort of got a bit more complex than that now.
Right.
Your heart has just totally packed in, and actually what you need is a heart transplant.
Wow.
I remember where I was, and I was like, wow, I actually burst into tears. Yeah, I was with my dad and my girlfriend at the time, and was just like, oh, wow, I'm totally overwhelmed with by this information, as you would be.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd particularly been looking after myself the best up to that point. So if you want to blame anyone, I can take the blame. The heart transplant, okay, that isn't in the UK, isn't as simple as, would you know, just nip to the hospital and have a heart transplant.
Sure.
So I was whizzed up to Newcastle for transplant assessment, which involves a load of tests, making sure that essentially you are, the conditions are right, that you can take a new heart, and blood types, antibody types.
So, I mean, Newcastle is a specialist transplant centre.
The Freeman is in Newcastle,
which is why they had to transfer you there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
I think by the time I'd got to Newcastle, it was too far gone.
Right.
So this bloke said to me, my dad, one of the doctors, he said, look, we're going to do these tests, but worst case scenario, if the pressures were high in your pulmonary artery,
okay,
then you wouldn't qualify for a heart. But don't worry, you know, there's still other things we can do.
Okay.
I was like, okay, cool, let's do the test. He's like, so ideal situation, we won't be coming back to speak to you again,
yeah,
because everything will be fine.
And we'll essentially put you on the list and book you in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then they came back the next day, and the guy's face was just like, his face, oh shit. And he took us all into like a side room.
Wow.
Obviously, the assessment hadn't gone to plan.
Yeah.
The pressures were unbelievably high because my heart had been failing for so long.
Yeah, so this had been an ongoing. Yeah.
Because I was always a bit tired as a child, but I guess I was never, you know, never. Well, all that happened, and no one knew. I didn't even notice. It was happening to me. I didn't even notice.
Right.
That, you know, that anything, that my heart was even a consideration. I thought I was working too hard. Yeah. Oh, it must be bloody stress.
Yeah.
So the solution, because the pressures were too high, not just a heart, you need heart and lungs. Which was like, okay, wow. Shit.
So that's essentially like a triple transplant, right? So
well, it's a double transplant. It's a block. So you take the whole block, and medically speaking, apparently to do the block is actually easier than just to do heart.
Because yeah, I remember you said that.
There's just less plumbing.
Half the plumbing is already
done.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, they just slot it in and then there you go.
Wow.
But unfortunately, there weren't any centres in the UK that could immediately take me for heart and lung because the circumstances weren't right. I mean, it's so lengthy.
Okay.
So they balanced me out up in Newcastle, drained a load, got rid of a load of fluid.
Balanced your medication.
Balanced medication. At this point, I felt okay-ish, but the outcome was always going to have to be a heart and lung transplant eventually one day, but no one could offer me one.
Because you had to regain some strength and essentially
to get on.
Yeah,
it just sort of gone as a window that they talk about, and the window had sort of...
Oh, right.
Okay. So I'm sent on my way, just like, okay, well, you feel all right now, but...
Probably in a few months you'll start feeling all right. And
then it'll be sort of gruesome ending, but...
Wow. Okay, so basically you were transferred to Newcastle from Manchester to the specialist place. They sort of patched you up by rejigging your medication, and said, well, you know, off you go.
Yes.
On your way.
Sent me on my merry way.
I believe they said sort of, you'll do all right for 6 months and then it'll start to deteriorate and then we'll have to reassess our options. And I mean, you lasted 18 months. You put 12 months on top of that target.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I never think of it in the time frame because, you know, obviously what's happened has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part of my life is sort of a blur to me now. It's gone. But yeah, it was sent on your way. Sorry, there's not really anything we can do now.
And the next thing I know, you're back in the office.
Yeah, straight back to work. Straight back to work.
So go on, you'd been given this crazy time, you know, you'll feel all right for a bit, but then unknown, something bad's going to happen. Why did you come back to work? Why didn't you go and, I don't know, travel the world or...
Well, I suppose to be crude about it, I wasn't really, I needed normality back. I needed something right. like, fucking hell, I didn't want to go and, I was shocked, so I was scared.
Yeah.
I was petrified. I wanted to just get back to normal. And I've always been a person that if everything, I think it's possibly like a man thing, like, if I pretend everything's normal, like blokes never go to the doctors, dude, if there's anything wrong.
Yeah.
They sort of just...
paper over the cracks.
Yeah, exactly. Put a plaster over it. And,
yeah, right.
So for me, getting back to normal.
Yeah.
Getting back, you know, I mean, I guess then at that point, there wasn't a future for me. So I wasn't like building a future for nothing.
Sure.
It was purely to give myself a routine.
Yeah, that you were familiar with and that felt like your life before. You'd just got this crazy news
and that was me proving to myself, I'm proving to everybody else, actually, I'm fine.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. It doesn't, you know, this isn't...
heart transplant, shrug.
Yeah, you know, you're about to snuff it, however.
Yeah, I mean, you're in this situation and then I suppose there was a glimmer of light.
Well, yeah.
At the end of the tunnel.
Someone says that fate doesn't exist. I don't know. this says otherwise. So my best friend... who still is my best friend, but my best friend at the time, my closest mate from school, Joe Robertson,
mm-hmm.
had a number of holiday rentals, vacation homes,
okay.
over in Spain on the south coast.
Yep.
And, you know, we have to consider at this point, like, this news had hit everyone, like, pretty like, Jesus Christ, what is going on here? Like, these are my oldest mates from school.
Yeah.
So Joe came to me and said, look, let's get away. I've got this place. It's empty for a week.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to drink, no partying, no bars, no clubs, no beach parties.
Not like, the usual kind of holiday. We'll just go and chill out.
Yeah. We'll go for some nice meals. We'll just relax, get by your head pool. Straight. I think I used to go through, in this period, pretty... wild, like, up and downs where everything was fine and then all of a sudden it hit me and I'd sort of break down and, you know, whatever used to come with a 25-year-old being told they were very close to death.
Yeah.
But we can't actually tell you when.
Yeah.
And we can't tell you how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But...
and we might sort you out maybe, but, you know, don't count on it.
Yeah, exactly. Then, so we're in Marbella, me and Joe, having the time of our lives, forgetting everything, you know, just being young lads on holiday, you know, whatever. Decide to go out for dinner one night and we bump into a family friend who they know from the area because they've holidayed in this place for a number of years.
Yeah, and people, yeah.
Yeah, so actually we decide that we were all going to have dinner together.
Yeah.
So we move on from a little beach bar where we were.
Yeah.
So we go for dinner, we sat down, as you know, I will start talking to anybody if they're near me. So this family friend's husband turns up and I'm, oh, how are you, you know, start speaking. We get into a big conversation.
What do you do?
Yeah, what do you do? Oh, well, actually, Alex, this sounds so crazy that, you know, it sounds like it's almost made up. But
can't make it up now. So this was Tim.
I'm actually Tim. Yeah, yeah. I'm retired now. However, I used to be a transplant surgeon for cardiothoracic, which is heart and lung, which is exactly what I'd needed.
Crazy.
So you know that was like wow. We end up chatting away all night, having a great time.
Him at this point when he said I used to be this, you said, oh, incidentally,
yeah, I was like, oh,
I need a heart and lung transplant.
Great. This couldn't be better. So Tim said, I explained the whole story how Newcastle had discharged me on a sort of wing of a prayer.
Yeah.
And he said, well, Withenshaw, why did you never get referred to Withenshaw, which is our local?
It is, yeah. South Manchester.
Yeah. Why did you never get there? I don't know. Because I was congenital, because I was born with this condition. Withenshaw, don't touch congenital people, congenital patients. Tim says, well, that's absolute nonsense. Like, let me speak to my guys on the inside.
Right, okay.
I mean, you have to imagine like what my parents have been through up to this point. So we tried sort of pry, you know, tried every single avenue.
Yeah.
Because every door had been closed.
Yeah.
And it was just a process of, you know, continue, knock, 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 private consultations.
Yeah, I mean, you'd contacted consultants in the States, yeah, and exactly, India. Yeah.
And this has just randomly happened. And it was random, you know, it wasn't
chance encounter.
It was a chance encounter
in a restaurant in Marbella. In Spain, yeah. Wow.
So crazy. Tim arranges a meeting with a leading heart failure consultant in Withenshaw Hospital, which is the local hospital to us. And we clicked. Everyone, you know, got on board with the story. Mm-hmm. And Withenshaw do the tests, etc. Yep, you do need a heart and lung. They were telling the truth.
They're right about that.
We are actually running a program. We've just restarted the program again.
Of heart and lung?
Heart and lung, yeah.
Okay. And they were fine with you being congenital. They were kind of like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were. Okay. I'm struggling to have the transplant. Need the heart and lungs still.
You're basically booked into a new hospital.
New hospital, move, discharged from Newcastle. Yeah, yeah, new set, new team.
Yeah.
All come from Tim.
Much more optimistic outlook.
Well, yeah, you know. Oh God, yeah, all of a sudden it was like, fuck it, we're going to,
yeah,
you know, I've got a chance here.
And at this point, your meds are still balanced. You're still feeling pretty good.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know, I was,
you'd be in the office every day working more or less as you were.
Carrying on, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, don't get me wrong, you know, it wasn't, I didn't feel top of my game, like,
no,
you know, how I do feel now. But there were good days and bad days, which anyone would know if they've got sort of like a chronic sure. illness or sure. condition, where, you know, however you want to describe it. So I guess with that, I was still young. I was 26 by this point,
mm-hmm.
still young,
mm-hmm.
not a single by this point. I have met a woman. When it very initially happened, that was, you know, I was like, I hadn't given up, clearly, but...
It was like such a shock to the system that I guess you really changed your life.
Yeah, so. Of course, yeah. And then as there was a bit of hope, I sort of went back to the old...
Having a few drinks,
not looking after myself amazingly.
Mm-hmm.
Getting
more embroiled in the stress of the business and, you know... As we've discussed in previous episodes, taking a bit more financial risk and that the stress that comes with writing checks. Yeah,
those sleepless nights.
Yeah.
So I am waiting for transplant at this point.
Yeah.
But I was balanced, and that's what was important. I was balanced.
Yeah.
The medicine was working.
And basically the hospital had said, we're not going
to... So you're on a list where it's active, yeah. but you're not urgent.
Yeah.
Urgent, you've got to be in hospital, hooked up to certain machines.
Okay. So there's two lists. There's a general and there's a
exactly,
urgent
yeah.
list.
Yeah.
You're on the general list. Basically, when your health starts to decline, that's when they'll start considering you seriously to have the operation.
Yeah, but for the instant time, you're not going to get the call.
Yeah.
Because okay. organs are in such a high demand. I mean, yeah. it's a whole nother... You know, it's another discussion point in itself, like
absolutely.
Organ donation.
Absolutely.
You know, they're in such high demand that it's not going to happen until you are...
Pretty...
Oh, so you're done, yeah.
Seriously along the way.
And we mentioned I'd start sort of... It was a waiting game.
Yeah.
When was the deterioration going to happen?
Yeah, back to relative normality.
Yeah. And then the point that I look back at and think this is what, you know, was the robbery.
The turning point, yeah.
The armed robbery, which was, yeah, pretty harrowing.
Absolutely. Yeah, so go on. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, that's cool. So just to paint a bit of a picture, I was probably not the most vigilant of people.
You didn't keep your head down.
No, well, you know, I'd had this huge event going on in the background.
Yeah.
And I sort of just thought, if I want to drive around in a, you know...
Flash car.
Flash sports car, then I will.
Wear a nice watch.
If I want to wear, you know, a solid gold watch and, you know, attract the wrong sort of attention, which is what happened.
Yeah. I mean, you had a... £100,000 car parked out, £100,000 house, like
yeah.
matte black,
yeah,
looking like a rapper.
The number one way to, you know, be a loser, not to look cool.
You didn't have a personalised number plate, though. So
I didn't have a personalised number plate, you're right. But unfortunately, which is shit, because it's a state of the current world. You can't have nice things. And if you do, people will come for them. And there was one night, a Thursday night it was.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my own because my partner was away for the weekend with her friends. And I was watching Ozark.
I remember it.
That's irrelevant. In my boxes with the dog, with Sydney, on the sofa. And I hear huge smash. And a brick lands, roll through the patio back doors. And
wow.
It just came to me at this point. I was like, here we go. Here we fucking go. I know what happens now. Yep. And four of them ran in. Ballys, balaclavas. Hammers, machetes, excuse my language.
Wow.
Get up, get on the fucking floor, get down on the floor. And I guess these idiots had assumed.
Car on the drive.
It's a tip off, isn't it? But they thought there was they knew there was a jeweler living in this house.
Yeah.
Obviously, I hadn't done I hadn't been keeping a low profile like what I do now, but, they knew there was a jewel, so they've come in asking for cash and jewellery. So, you know, that can't be a coincidence, can it? You're not just going into anyone's house asking for cash and jewellery.
No, absolutely.
Took everything in the house, which there wasn't a great deal. Unfortunately, which I'd still, do anything to get back, they took a watch that, not the gold watch, because that was a separate thing, but my 21st present.
Yeah, your dad bought you
which was like a really
steel
really,
Rolex for your 21st
Yeah, which was
birthday.
Actually pretty low key, but I was just a dickhead with too much money and whatever. Wanted to be flashy.
Yeah.
They took loads of sentimental things, jewellery, bit of cash, £500 that was scattered around. And bear in mind, I was end stage heart failure at this point. You know, I was waiting to become unbalanced.
Yeah.
And
some kind of event like that in your life, just the stress of it's going to affect anyone. But if you're already dealing with these health things and, after such a crazy incident like that, you're going to be looking over your shoulder. You were saying that
you
had to move out of the house because...
Well, yeah, I moved in with my partner, which was away, out of the village, away from my family.
Yeah.
Sort of developed quite... hard anxiety. I was scared. I'm not like embarrassed to say that. Like I would never stand up to four people anyway. But four people coming in armed, it absolutely petrified me. And how did I cope with that? My way of coping with that was to have an extra glass of wine at night to make sure I can get to sleep. Which, retrospectively. Wasn't the right thing to do.
Not necessarily, but, I get it.
Between the robbery and excessively drinking and not looking after myself, being very stressed, being anxious, huge lack of sleep.
Yeah.
And, what happened then? Everything went downhill. Livers back in. Yeah. Liver packed in, not my livers, my one liver. Kidneys back in. Which is ultimately a result of the heart.
Yeah.
The balance, the balance has now been knocked.
It really exacerbated your heart failure, which then, the rest of your body started to essentially shut down, really.
Yeah, so the time had come, I was getting to the urgent state.
Yeah, stage. I mean, I remember vividly we were in the office and you had a meeting with your consultant, which you went to, and you didn't come back in that day, which was unusual. You probably would have usually done. And the next day you said, well, my consultants basically said, we want you to check yourself into hospital now because we need to put you on drips. We need to be giving you pretty strong drugs to keep your heart function up, keep the rest of your body in tip-top form. But I just need a few days to work out what I'm going to do. Because at this point, if you were checked into hospital, that would be it until your transplant day. They wouldn't, you wouldn't be leaving.
Yeah, basically. I guess it's a prison, it's a jail sentence, isn't it, in some ways?
Yeah.
And then in my head, to respond to that, the and you know, there's no saying you're getting out alive, needing a heart and lung, you know, heart and lung transplant.
Yeah.
You know, you've probably got a 50-50
really
going in, yeah.
So this story is quite long, and we've got to split it into two parts. In the next episode, you will find out what happened when Alex ended up back in hospital, the aforementioned catastrophic event, and the knock-on effects that has had with Alex's health and the health of the business.